Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Well, now we can talk about books we don't like because I'm recording. Hi, everybody. Welcome to episode 521 of the Professional Book Nerds Podcast, presented by Overdrive. This is Adam, joined by Joe. What was that head shake for?
That's a big number right there.
I know. Another podcast that we follow and that follows us on Twitter, like, tagged us in a tweet last night that was like, join us in celebrating our 150th episode. So it was like, you know, a nice milestone. And someone else commented like, wow, that's a lot of editing. And it took everything in my power not to be like, you want to talk about a lot of editing? Let me tell you about 500 plus episodes of Jill and Adam talking. How's it going?
It's going.
Yeah, it's very cold. Doldrums of winter here in Northeast Ohio.
It is cold. We finally got our dining room furniture.
That's exciting.
That is exciting. Yeah, it was on back order for a while, but we had a kitchen table. So it's not like we were like not eating on a table for the past 6 weeks, 2 months, but yeah.
I remember a coworker of ours, Ben, who he's also very close friends with me in real life. He and his wife had they were buying a new table and there was a delay. So they just kept posting pictures of like them sitting with no table with their cats just eating like on their laps.
Yep.
Okay. Listen, everybody, we've never gotten a response like this, but so many of you want to hear about books that Jill and I don't love, or as somebody wrote in an email, didn't jive with us, I think was a good way of describing it. And I also appreciate a few people being like, well, we know you work for Overdrive, so you don't want to like dunk on books, but
right,
we're going to tell you about books we don't enjoy, and we will provide reasoning. We can also, of course, like tell you what the book is about, so maybe if you want to read it, you can.
That's fair.
So that's what we're gonna do today. This kind of started a few weeks ago. I was talking about how there's a book called The Guest List, which is still on New York Times bestsellers list, by Lucy Foley. So I don't mind talking negatively about it because my opinion is not hindering the amount of sales. I just said I thought it was very like formulaic and boring, and I didn't like any of the characters, and it felt like a cheap version of an Agatha Christie book, basically. And then we kind of asked, we're like, do you guys want to hear this type of stuff? And y'all want to hear this type of stuff.
It was a lot of people wanting to hear what we don't like, which I appreciate. You know, like, we talk, not we, if you follow a bunch of writers on Twitter or are active in book Twitter, you know, there's always a whole thing where like reviews are not for the writers, they are for readers, and reviews, good or bad, serve a purpose. And I think some people are hesitant, and obviously we were for 520 episodes too. Talk about books we don't like, but they're, you know, that might help someone like steer them clear from a book they also wouldn't like.
And as someone else said, like, all of your feedback, guys, was so like thoughtful and wonderful. Someone was like, brought up the point where it's like, it takes a long time to read a book, and so if you get a suggestion from someone else that like maybe avoid this one, that's actually helpful. I will say, if you don't enjoy a book, this should be a blanket statement. Don't tag the reader, or don't tag the writer, the author, on any of your posts about it. Like, even if they do something inherently awful, and even if like maybe as a person they're not the greatest human being, like, there's nothing can be gained from that. You're telling someone you think they're bad, and they'll either ignore it but see it, or they'll talk with you on social media, which is not a place anyone has ever changed their mind ever. So leave your reviews.
Yeah. Also, don't email them. We don't want to hear that. I've had that happen. It's hilarious, but sometimes not. So just keep, you know, again, go to Goodreads. That's what it's for.
Mm-hmm.
Authors, or stay away from there.
If you hated a book, you know what? If you hated a book, email us at professionalbookers@overdrive.com and tell us about it. And if it's like politically correct, we can read
that's
them
fine.
Here.
Yeah, you know, that's funny. I actually will say all the books on this list are ones I finished. There are probably hundreds of books I could have listed that I didn't like that I did not finish because it takes a long time to read a book and there are too many books out there that I would enjoy. I don't waste time with books I don't like, but I also, that feels sort of unfair to talk about a book I didn't finish because who knows how it may have turned out. So these are all books I finished, but there are lots of ones I did not finish.
Yeah.
I feel like Goodreads like needs that as an option. You know what I mean?
Uh-huh. Yeah. I
mean, other than like, just like one star in a book, just be like, I didn't finish it.
Yeah. I when I was using Goodreads, I created a DNF bookshelf. But if you put a book on a bookshelf, I still think it counts it as like read. So I'd have to go in and uncheck read to put it on my DNF. It was,
I mean, you know, Libby tags, go ahead and tag those books.
Look at you. DNF. Look at you. It's almost like we just had a company meeting yesterday about tags.
Yep.
Yeah, so but same thing. I think we each have six, and I also finished all of these books. But same, like the amount of books I was looking through my list, I was like, oh man, I just gave up on a lot of these for whatever reason. Okay, so can I just get my first one out of the way that everyone, like, it's not my first one on the list, but it's one that I've talked about for 500 episodes. This is the one book that I've not seen.
Okay.
So The Catcher in the Rye by J.D. Salinger is hot trash, and I don't care. This will be like my most firm stance. J.D. Salinger is no longer alive. Also, he wouldn't hear this if he was alive because he stared away from everything else. Also, every single person has had to read this book in high school. So I'm not going to tell you what The Catcher in the Rye is about. I dislike it because it's a book whose main character is inherently unlikable, who... It, like the whole plot of the book, and I always thought like maybe when I was younger I just didn't understand, and so it was like my fault as a reader, but the whole plot is him being like, I'm gonna go run away, no I'm not, just kidding, scene, that's it. And like the whole time he does various things that are just awful and annoying, and he's smarmy, and he's like, I was a very emo kid as in high school, some might say that I am still an emo kid, but I did not relate to Holden at all, Holden Caulfield, which is infuriating because I didn't ever think this through because my older dog's name is Holden, but he is named after a Chasing Amy character. And the amount of times that people have put two and two together with like, you work for a book company, you co-host a book podcast, your dog's name is Holden, you must love Catcher in the Rye. I regret everything. So I'm going to give you a positive version. If you want to read a book whose main character is inherently unlikable, but is an enjoyable thing to read, I am going to suggest A Confederacy of Dunces by John Kennedy Toole. It's very, very funny. It's a lot like a Don Quixote of New Orleans type of a story. And like, again, the main character, you will not like him. You will very much dislike him. But the book is actually funny. And I just kind of, it's a different version of Catcher in the Rye. So anyway, that's my Catcher in the Rye monologue. Thank you for letting me get on a soapbox. The rest of these will be respectable, so you can start.
Oh, are we starting with those?
You can do whatever.
I can start with mine.
Yeah,
no,
go for
actually
it.
We actually put our lists together in advance. Y'all know that we don't do this. When you put A Confederacy of Dunces, I kind of laughed because I have a lot of opinions about white cis men who love A Confederacy of Dunces, because it sort of is like this.
That's totally fair. That's totally fair.
I put it alongside that other book whose name I cannot remember right now, where the author had died. And this is terrible. It'll come to me later. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So anyway, okay. We're starting with the big ones that we didn't really like. Yeah. That's actually probably good. Let's go ahead and start with the really big ones we didn't like, and then we'll be a little more respectful. Mm-hmm. I rage quit reading The 7.5 Deaths of Evelyn Hardcastle, like rage quit reading this book. And I don't do that very often, but I did not make it very far in this book. So this is a book, I know you liked it. I know lot of people liked it. This is about Aiden, he wakes up in a different, he's at like a party at like an old house, whatever. And there's character Evelyn will die, and he keeps waking up in a different body of a house guest until he figures out who the killer is. I love this concept. This is a fantastic concept. I'm all about this. Like, the time period is like very Agatha Christie. You got like this cool house. You got these interesting characters. In one of the early chapters of the book, Aiden walks into a room and is looking around at all the other characters. And I cannot remember this particular character's name, unfortunately, but there's a character who is fat. And the way Stuart Turton describes this character, I knew right away that A, that was going to be one of the bodies that Aiden was in, and B, it was going to be so bad and like super, super fat phobic. And just like the way Aiden described how he felt being in this body and the way he described this character from the outside is awful. Like, it is awful. And I was right. That was one of the bodies, and it was just as bad as I thought it would be. It was probably worse. And so I rage quit 7.5 Deaths of Evelyn Hardcastle. So I lied. I did not finish that book. That is the only one on my list I did not finish because I literally could not finish that book. It made me so angry. And what I have learned since then is that there are several books that exist like this. Some of them are YA, but it's the same idea of somebody, for whatever reason in the book, inhabits the body of someone else. And inevitably, the body or bodies that they inhabit is a fat person, and the descriptions are terrible. Mm. Like, they are just terrible. They are fat phobic. They are rage inducing. If you live in a fat body and navigate that world or at all familiar with fat politics, yeah. So I rage quit 7.5 Deaths of Evelyn Hardcastle. I did not like that book. Did not finish it, but I feel necessary to talk about this.
Oh yeah, absolutely. And I will say, like, one of the, I did, when I read it, I did like the book, and it was, I think, like 3 years ago at this point. And I will say, one of the things that I've really, really been proud of about the podcast is the 5+ years. Oh my God. The 5+ years you and I have been doing this, between interacting with each other and talking with authors, I have become much more aware of things that I wouldn't maybe notice in a book that are offensive, that just because, as you just said, like, my privilege is I am a cis white male. Like, so there are things I might not notice. And so I've become much more aware of that. And like, looking back, you're absolutely right about 7.5 Deaths. Like, another one is the new Naomi Novik book came out, and it's about the school. And there's a scene in there, and it got some attention on Twitter and stuff, but there's a scene where there is a black student, and they have cornrows, and there's like a bug or something that comes down and like gets into the cornrows, nests in there. And like, the way that it's described is something that is like, it's so horrifically offensive. And I probably wouldn't have noticed it 5 years ago, but now, because of this podcast and the way that we don't just read books, but we talk about them, like, I'm much more aware of that. So I fully am on board with your point on that one, 100%. Okay. So my next one is called The God Game by Danny Toby. And I'll describe what the book is, and I'll we've been doing. I'll explain why I didn't love it. The God Game really excited me when I started it. And it's got lovely reviews and has wonderful like promotion by people like Carlin Coben and all sorts of stuff. It's a tech thriller. And what it is, it's about this group of kids who are in high school. They are a group of friends. They call themselves the Vindicators. They're targeted by bullies, and like, they're pressured by people. They're nerds. They're geeks. That's how they're described. They're gamers. And they discover this game called the God Game in like kind of like a dark web type of a situation. And you are told that it's created by these coders and maintained by like underground hackers. And it's this like artificial intelligence that thinks it's God. And it tells you to do things, and you progress through the game. And as you might suspect in a book like this, it starts with like pretty mundane tasks, and it gets to much more aggressive, dangerous things. The reason that I didn't like this book, I love the concept. It was very interesting. The reason I didn't like it is because it establishes a set of rules for this game and for the world and continues to break those rules. And it's just frustrated me so much because, like, I love world building. This wasn't really fantasy. This is more like science fiction. Like, I love world building and fantasy, but an important part of world building in fantasy or science fiction is in that world building, you are building out the rules of the world. And so you have an expectation as a reader. And there's a difference between creating plot turns and plot twists and just breaking apart the rules that you have set up because it feels like lazy writing. And it's just, I found myself listening or reading the book and just being like, okay, well, this thing thinks it's God, but it's still an artificial intelligence. But, like, the more and more you read the book, it's like almost like it is God. Like, it literally has no flaws about it. I'm like, okay, well, it's still a computer program. Like, there's, there has to be some inherent thing about it. And I don't want to give away the ending, because if this sounds like a thing that if you're okay with rules being broken, you might really like this book because it is interesting. But I hate that. I really, really hate when a book is just like, just kidding. I know we established something.
Yeah.
So yeah, like I said, the God game, like I said, really interesting concepts. Not bad writing, but just every single time they'd be like, it wasn't a plot twist. It was just like a plot disruption. It was just like a breaking of what existed there. So didn't love it.
I don't like when people break the rules.
I know
their own books.
Exactly. Yeah. Just don't tell me the rules. If there are no rules, then you can't break them. Fine. Okay. It would be chaos, but okay, whatever.
Especially when it's a series. Like, y'all, I love Stephen King. I love Misery. I don't support what Annie Wilkes did, but I understand why she was mad that he changed the rules.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, yeah. To be fair, I'm not trying to hobble Danny Tobin. I think he's a good writer. I'm not trying to break those ankles.
Yeah. It's not like that. It's not like that. Yeah. No, I was a big Twilight girl back in the day, y'all, like, you know, 15 years ago. But, you know, the whole first three books are from Bella's point of view. And then in Breaking Dawn, there's a point where it switches point of view. And the whole thing was so weird. I was just like, you know what? Nope, I'm out.
Yeah. What's your next one?
My next one is Idaho by Emily Ruskovich. So this came out a couple of years ago. I was very excited for it. It sounded really good. It's about Anne and Wade. Anne is Wade's second wife. They live, you know, in the rugged landscape of Northern Idaho, per the description. I did not come up with that on my own. And Wade's memory is failing, and Anne attempts to sort of piece together what happened with Wade's first wife, Jenny, and their daughters. And it sort of moves between perspectives, including Anne Wade and his first wife, who is in prison. And so you're sort of like trying to uncover what is happening. So I think it was wonderfully written. Full disclosure, I don't read a lot of literary fiction. I don't read a lot of books that one would describe as literary fiction. I tend to mostly read genre fiction. And so I think I was expecting this to be more of like a traditional mystery, and it's not. I kept waiting for something to happen. I mean, it won an Edgar, so that suggests that there's a mystery to it, but it was not structured in a way I was expecting, and it did read more like a literary novel, which is fine. That's just not what I was anticipating. But again, it's a well-written book. And if you go in understanding, I feel like this had the exact opposite problem of Little Fires Everywhere, where I went into this expecting a mystery and got literary fiction, versus I took forever to read Little Fires Everywhere because I expected it to be straight literary fiction. I was like, oh, there's like this mystery thing going on.
Yeah.
Or maybe, you know, like maybe, you know, I mean, there is mystery in the sense that there's information you don't know, and the book is sort of about uncovering that. That's just not exactly what I was looking for. So,
yeah, no, I know what you mean, though, because I do read a fair amount of literary fiction, especially recently. And we've talked about some of the books where, like, I enjoy a book that's about like a small town and a small moment in that small town. But at the same time, like, if I borrow one of those books expecting it to be like something. It's definitely, we talked about this in our team recently. We were talking about the movie The Village by M. Night Shyamalan, and we were talking about how it's a great movie. It just was like marketed weird, and that's why people had weird misconceptions about it. I totally know what you mean. It's like if you go in expecting something and you keep waiting for that something to happen, you're like, okay, well, there's 50 pages left. What are we doing here?
Right. And, you know, some of it might be user error and the fact that it's not necessarily that it was marketed poorly. I just maybe misunderstood what the book was. You know, like it can go either way.
But at the same time, it won an Edgar, which is
it won an Edgar. But I didn't, it just, I think it was like a quiet mystery, I guess, is probably the best way. It was not the sort of genre mystery of like Mary Higgins Clark or whatever that I was expecting.
Yeah, that's fair. Okay, my next one is The Secret Commonwealth by Philip Pullman. And this hurts my heart because I love his Dark Materials so, so much. I have talked about his Dark Materials a myriad of times. I adore it. Our friend Mallory and I pitched a podcast randomly to someone about like reviewing his Dark Materials, the show. They didn't get back to us. I'm not mad about it. It's fine. But I love, so the Secret Commonwealth is the second book in the second trilogy of the His Dark Materials kind of world. So the Book of Dust, the first book is called La Belle Sauvage. That is delightful. It's it talks about Lyra and Pantalaimon when she's an adult. It builds off of the world that His Dark Materials created and kind of like the aftermath, picking up the pieces and how she proceeds in her life. It was wonderful. It definitely set the stage for like a whole new adventure. I was so excited and I love that it was still like that same world, but it's different. And then the second one came out, The Secret Commonwealth. And it's, y'all, it's like 800 pages. And when I got it, I was so excited. I got the physical copy, had a deckled pages. So everything about it, so excited. It is the most middle book of a trilogy ever. It is, and like, don't get me wrong, I still got 800 pages of Pan and Lyra and everyone doing fun things in that world, so it's fine, but like all it is doing is setting up the third book. Speaking of Mallory, there is a text conversation she and I had that was like 3 hours long about how frustrating it was because you just kept waiting for something to happen and then you got to like 30 pages left and you're like, this is going to be like the end of the first or second Lord of the Rings movie where it's kind of like fate. They're just like at the top of the mountain, whatever it is. Again, the writing is good. It's Philip Pullman. And of course I'm going to read the third one because this friggin' book, that's kind of the point of it, but it's like, it is the most middle book of a trilogy ever. It's literally setting up the third one and he spends 800 pages doing it. So if you are a His Dark Materials fan, I know you're going to read it, but just know that all it's doing is like setting up the chessboard for what will happen in the third of these books. So,
yeah, that's the struggle of middle books in the trilogy. That's hard. Yeah.
And I know that happens. I understand. And like you said, it's one of those things as well where the first book was a certain way and then you want to do something. You want to do the things that your readers love, but you also want to do something different. And you run that risk of just like being completely, it was fine. I just... it didn't jive with me as whoever wrote that email. So
there you go. Okay. My next one is Armada by Ernest Cline.
Yep. Let's get into it.
You all know that we love Ready Player One. I was not as big of a fan of Ready Player Two, but I read it and enjoyed it. Armada exists outside of those books. It is about Zach. He lives a lot in video games and virtual worlds. And then aliens show up and he is sort of taking on this.
I don't know why that made me laugh so hard. It's exactly what happens, but like just the way you said it, it's like,
aliens show up. So he is like taken, like, you know, his years of video games have made him the perfect sort of, you know, it's like practice basically to do this flight simulator, the Armada, which is gamers who are now protecting us from aliens. Okay, there's a couple things with this one. First, just read Ender's Game.
If this is the type of book you want, just read Ender's
Game. Now, to be fair, Orson Scott Card personally as a person,
not a good dude,
trash. So, you know, take that under advisement if you decide to read Ender's Game. I love Ender's Game so much. And it is, I think, a much better example of that idea of a battle school, a flight simulator, space fights, and, you know, protecting the Earth. Just read Ender's Game. And I think, you know, I feel like, you know, I think Ernest Cline fell into that trap that a lot of debut authors whose book is huge falls into, in that he had to put something out and, mm-hmm. you know, people were expecting something else from him, like something new from him that was just as exciting and just as, would be just as big and just as popular as Ready Player One. And that's hard to do. Like that sophomore book is tricky, which is why it probably took him so long to have Ready Player Two. You know, he falls on a lot of the same tropes that kind of happen in Ready Player One, but I don't think he executes them as well, or maybe because he did them already, it feels lazy. You know, you have this geeky kid who doesn't have a lot of friends and is like, blah, blah, whatever. And then there's this girl he likes and she's treated as this like side quest to get her. And it did not jive with me. Mm-hmm. Just read Ender's Game. But, yeah. You know, maybe you will like this. Maybe you're like, you know what? I actually don't want to read Ender's Game because Orson Scott Card is a terrible person. This would be a fair replacement. You know, that's fine. That's fine. But it just, yeah.
Listen, if you want to read Ender's Game, that's like, it's fine. Go get the book from like a Half Price Books or something. Where,
or the library.
Or the library. But supporting libraries does support authors. Yeah. And I mean, so does like secondhand book places. But find his book at like a garage sale or something so that he doesn't get any of your money. But it is one of those moments where you're like, shit, this guy is a garbage baby, but this is such a good book. So,
it's so hard. I read the whole series. I read some of the Bean books. The movie was awful. We won't talk about it, but I did a trivia group. We did like a bar trivia years ago. Like, I don't know, like 10 years ago. And our team name was Dragon Army. I mean, like, we were all of us. I love Ender's Game. Armada just.
Yeah. And I know we're kind of being a little like book nerdy gatekeeper in the sense we're not talking about why Orson Scott Card is terrible. Just send us an email if you're not aware. We can talk about it.
I just don't want to get into that conversation right now. Exactly. I feel like.
Yeah. Okay. So my next one is called The Gargoyle Hunters by John Freeman Gill. There's another one that was on bestsellers list. I feel like all of the books I talk about were on like hit bestsellers list, so I don't feel bad not enjoying them. The Gargoyle Hunters does this thing where I get very frustrated when a book just takes a left turn in the middle of the book, just seemingly to do that. Mm-hmm. So the first half of this book, I was so in on. It is the story of this 13-year-old kid named Griffin, and he is living, it's 1970s Manhattan, and his father, he's estranged with, but they have this relationship because his father is like, the thing he does, he has a salvage business, but what he does is he goes to old Gilded Age New York buildings that are going to be torn down and literally like takes parts of those buildings, like the architectural sculptures, like the gargoyles and the goddesses and the sea monsters and all this stuff. And then he sells them. And the interesting thing is, this is like a real thing that happened in 1974. There was a New York Times, like a front page article about the theft of an entire landmark building was being stolen like piece by piece by these people and sold off. And so the first half of this book is all about them, like his mom is like struggling as well, as you can imagine, because this is a really like depressed family. But the first half of the book is all about him and his dad going on these like literally like Indiana Jones style adventures around New York City, where they're like stealing huge pieces of architecture. And it gets really into the like, it's almost like Ocean's 11, mm-hmm. where like it explains what's happening. And I'm like, wow, this is so fun. It's so weird. Jill and I both talk about how much we love Gilded Age New York stories.
Yeah.
so in on it. And then halfway through, it kind of like, it just takes a turn where this Griffin has to become like the man of the house. And the whole like shtick is like, oh, they're salvaging pieces of these buildings. He has to realize what parts of himself he wants to salvage. Get it? Wink, wink, nudge, nudge. And it just turns into this like family, like depressing family drama, which I love a family drama, but it's all about like the father and the son's relationship. And it, the author just gets away from the, all like the heisty games, which is so much fun. And it was promoted like a heist book. And I was like, damn, this rules. And then it just stopped talking about the heist things halfway through. And like, I kept reading it being like, there's gotta be like one more big heist, right? And it's just, there kind of isn't. And so people might read this and love it. Like, I feel like this is actually more of a book recommendation than like a book like degradation, but it just made such a left turn that I was so bummed out by it. So The Gargoyle Hunters by John Freeman Gilligan. It was well written, but I hate when a book does that where it's like, oh, did you enjoy the plot that I was just giving you? Too bad. Now you're going to read a second novella in this one book.
Oh, just kidding. My next one is The Dilemma by B.A. Paris. Okay. Behind Closed Doors is one of the best like thriller books I have ever read. And I have read her other books. I didn't, you know, they were okay. Again, it's hard to come back from a super popular thing.
Mm-hmm.
So The Dilemma is about a woman who, it's her birthday, her husband is throwing her this big party because they didn't, it was like to make up for the wedding they never had, and everyone's going to be there, their daughter Marnie, she's studying abroad, and the wife Livia, she's actually happy Marnie's not coming because she recently learned there's a lot of secrets in this one. This is one of those books where there's like everyone has a secret and nobody's telling anyone. And so like Livia has learned a secret about her daughter. Her husband has a secret that Marnie, he's actually flying Marnie back for the wedding as a surprise, or for the party as a surprise. But he also has like this other secret he's not keeping, or he is keeping from his wife. Their like son has a secret, like everyone has secrets. And I just sort of kept waiting for something to happen and it didn't, you know, like, and B.A. Paris or other books have this sort of like big twist type thing. And this one didn't. And so, yeah, I went in thinking it was going to be like her other books and it wasn't. It's just a lot of people with secrets, none of which were particularly like, ooh, that's so scary. I mean, I just was like, okay.
Yeah, that's how I felt about that, the guest list. It was like, okay, not everyone can have a shocking backstory. Like, come on. Sometimes you're just an accountant and that's okay.
Yeah.
So the two I have left, it's a little weird because we promoted them on our best of or like preview of a month. And then I read them and I was disappointed in both. And I think that's okay. Because as we've told people before, like a lot of the books, Jill and I talk about the fact that we're excited to read for our monthly previews are just that, books Jill and I are excited to read. We haven't yet read. And this was one of them and I didn't love it. So it's The Liar's Dictionary by Eley Williams. This, and I specifically remember talking about it when we were doing the recording, because it's this book about Swansby's dictionary, encyclopedic dictionary, and it talks about the concept of a mount weasel, which is a fake thing that are put into, like a fake passage that are put into dictionaries and encyclopedias to prevent copyright. Like, this was a big thing back in the day when encyclopedias and dictionaries were purchased, like physical copies, like people could just steal like the Swansby's or the Oxford Dictionary and just reprint it and say it's ours. And so what happens in this book is there's two different timelines. There's one with It's told in Victorian times, and it follows this character, Peter, who ends up kind of putting some of these Mount Weasels into the Swansby Dictionary. And the other narrative is in present day, and it follows this character, Mallory, who is an intern and at Swansby's, and they are in charge of basically digitizing the Encyclopedic Dictionary. And so it goes back and forth between these two stories and comes to a thrilling conclusion, quote unquote. The problem is I didn't care at all for the Victorian chapters, not because it's Victorian, just because it was so boring. And when your book is going back and forth between timelines, if as a reader, you just don't care about one and you're just trying to get to the other timeline again, it's just a slog. And so the book is short. It's very quick, so you can get through it. And I don't know. I just found myself, and it's like very interestingly set up where each chapter is for a specific letter in the dictionary or in the alphabet rather. And so it's like A is for something. And then like that letter and that word is involved in that chapter. But I just, this Peter character, I didn't care about him. I didn't care about his life. I didn't care about his troubles. He just, everything that was happening to him, I was like, stand up for yourself. Like, no one, a horrible thing would happen to him and people would just make jokes about it. I'm like, this wouldn't happen. I don't care. And so it was just a slog because half the book was very boring to me. So if you're gonna have multiple timelines, it's tricky because of course you want your reader to care about all of them.
Yeah.
And if you don't, it turns into an okay short story and a terrible short story combined to make one blah book. What's your next one?
This next one is a tricky one because I included it on my list of the best books of 2019. And now I'm like, no, it's not. Okay. The book is Trust Exercise by Susan Choi. It's not that I didn't like it necessarily. It's that I don't know how to feel about it. And I am very much a person who's like a gut instinct kind of thing. So if I don't love something, that probably means I don't like that. I hate it essentially. Mm-hmm. And I don't love this. I don't even know if I mean, I like it. I listen. I mean, I like the writing. I think it's well written. I think it is an interesting story. I should go back and listen to our 2019 episode to remember how I talked about it then. But I don't know. I don't know how to feel about it. Do you know what I mean? Like, it's just, I have a lot of conflicting feelings. So this is, it starts in high school in the 1980s and they're students at a performing arts high school. Wow. And these two freshmen, David and Sarah, fall in love. And their like relationship gets noticed by their charismatic acting teacher, Mr. Kingsley. And so it's about that. And it's sort of like the book, and even in the description, it's sort of set up like, this relationship is a catalyst for a lot of things that you won't understand until the end, which is true. That is 100% accurate. But man, it takes some left turns that are very, very unexpected that I don't necessarily care for. I mean, it's essentially like three books in one, you know. It just takes some like novellas. Yeah, it's sort of like three novellas that fit together in one book that are connected, and you do figure things out by the end, and things are explained and whatever, but it took some dramatic turns.
Yeah.
That I didn't really like. And so again, but I just don't know how I feel about this book. And maybe, I know people loved it. It won awards. It was like on all of the best lists. It was on our best books list. But I don't know how I feel about it.
Yeah. So that's fair. That's fair. Okay. So my last one, this like just came out and it's on most anticipated lists literally all around the world. In fact, the author was on our friend Mallory and Bria's podcast, Reading Glasses.
It's recently too, I think.
Right? Like a couple, 2 weeks ago, I think, or last week. It's We Could Be Heroes by Mike Chen. And I want to preface this by saying, like, the concept of the book is awesome. The writing is awesome. It's very, very likely that if the why I'm as to why I didn't love it, if it doesn't bother you, you'll probably love this book. But it tells the story of these two characters, who Jamie and Zoe, who they have superpowers and they wake up with no memory. And one of them decides to be a villain to kind of rob banks. And the other one decides to sort of be a superhero and prevent this from happening. But Jamie, the character who robs banks, has these powers where he can manipulate people's memories. And Zoe is like super strong, super fast, all that stuff. Jamie robs banks because he can do it without harming people. And the money that he's stealing is insured, and then he wants to take that money, and he's kind of wants to like disappear. So like, even though he's doing a bad thing, he's like thinks through it and he's not trying to harm anybody. And so in his mind, it's a victimless crime. They meet up at a memory loss support group, kind of figure out who each other are. And then they decide, we need to figure out how we got these powers and why can't we remember anything before. And so that's what they go and they do. It's all fun. It's very enjoyable. When a book hinges on a mystery and you find yourself figuring out the mystery very quickly, I feel like I'm just kind of playing out the string at that point. So they get together, and all of this is like kind of in the description. I'm not really giving anything away, but they form this sort of like tenuous friendship, and then they go and they try to figure out what is happening. And what's uncovered as to how they're getting their powers and how they got their powers. I made an assumption from that where I was like, oh, I think this is what's happening. And it turned out exactly what I thought was exactly right. And it's like, I just found myself reading the last like 100 pages or so just to get through it. And so this is why I love like the Invisible Life of Addie LaRue and The Starless Sea so much, because like it hinges on a mystery that you don't know what's going to happen, and like literally until the last page you're like, yeah, wow, that was amazing, and you're still wondering if a book's premise is designed to make you think like, oh, I wonder what's going to happen next in this world. It has to keep doing that, and right, this just didn't for me. And again, like, it was enjoyable. I definitely think people who like superhero type stories like The Rest of Us Just Live Here, which we always talk about, I think you'll like this book. For me, it was just like, I was like, I think this is what's going to happen. And then when I figured out that I ended up being right, it's like watching a movie where you're like, I think this is where the plot's going. And then when it does, you're like, well, I don't know.
See, I don't do that. I'm like, I was right. Yes.
That's fair. Okay. That's totally fair. I will say I am uncannily good at figuring out plots and like seeing where things are going to go in movies and in TV shows. And so then I kind of like lose interest, and that's kind of like what happened here. So again, it's not that it's a bad book. It just didn't sit with me because I was like, is this what's going to happen? Oh, okay. That's what's going to happen. Whatever. So
That's fair. Yeah. Oh, my last one is The Goldfinch by Donna Tartt.
All like 1,000 pages of it.
I have talked obsessively on this podcast about how much I love A Secret History. This book just felt like work to read, you know, like it was, felt like work. And it, like, you could feel the work that Donna Tartt put into it, if that makes sense. You know, like, some writers are very good about making their writing feel effortless, and you don't see the hours of like writing and revisions, and it just feels like work. This is also why I don't like Joyce Carol Oates books. I have tried like 10 different Joyce Carol Oates books. And I didn't include any of that. I could have listed like just any Joyce Carol Oates book.
Just a Joyce Carol Oates podcast.
Joyce Carol Oates, I don't like her books because they feel like work, and I don't care about any of the characters, which I think is also the problem with The Goldfinch. I just didn't care. Like, I didn't really have any reason to care. It's not that they were unlikable. It's not, you know, I just was like, meh, okay, you got this kid, you know, there's a painting.
Yeah.
His mom dies. He's taken in by these rich friends. There's a painting. Oh, and like there's like this whole MacGuffin thing. And like I have, you know, like there's limits to what I'm willing to put up.
Yeah.
For a MacGuffin. It won the Pulitzer. Lots of people liked it. I did not. I just found it boring. And you know, and like I actually in my notes, I mentioned that it's not that it's the length and it's not that it's like this big story. Oh, actually, I meant to put this in.
I didn't.
It's not the length and it's not that it's a big book and it's not that it's like a character study and all of that stuff. Like I read A Little Life in 72 hours, which is like a 600 page book. This was just boring. That said, there is like a cameo of a character from Secret History, which I think is delightful. And just fun. It's at a party. But again, lots of people really enjoyed this book.
And I will say, one, I love that in our notes you wrote meh. Like that's a good.
I did. That's how I'm like meh.
Yeah. But I will say, I remember when it won the Pulitzer, right? Is that what you said? I remember like a lot of people on social media being like, really? This book? Like it, and like high up people. I don't think you're alone in your thoughts on this book.
I don't even remember what other books it would have necessarily been up against that year. Do they actually even list? Like, is there a short list of the Pulitzer? I don't even know. Type in Pulitzer Prize Goldfinch. The third is from the Washington Post, the disappointing novel that just won a Pulitzer Prize. You know, and I feel like, you know, maybe to some degree, this is sort of like a Martin Scorsese Oscar thing. They're like, you know what? Or Peter Jackson winning for the third Lord of the Rings. I mean, like, you know, sort of like maybe sort of course correcting on a previously overlooked title. I don't know. It just.
Yeah.
It's just, you know, it feels a lot like The Testaments for Margaret Atwood winning. Was it like she tied for the Booker, I think? And people are like, really?
Yeah.
Couldn't just give it to the other author. You had to tie. Mm-hmm. And again, it sort of feels like, well, it's Margaret Atwood. And she wrote this sequel to The Handmaid's Tale. And we're just going to give her the prize. And so, I don't know. Like, I just, meh, on the Goldfinch. I don't know if it was Pulitzer Prize worthy. Yeah. Lots of people liked it. And you may be one of those people. And that is totally fine.
Yeah. And listen, there are all sorts of books. There's a couple books that I read last year that I was like, man, this is kind of not great. And they were finalists for National Book Awards and things like that. Like this, not every book is for every person. That being said, so many of you wrote in and said, please do this. Now it's your turn. I want to see the book. I want to hear about the books that you don't jive with. And if you're going to put it on like social, if you're going to tag us on social media, maybe be respectful. If you want to be kind of nasty and mean via email, go for it. Well, because Jill and I are the only ones who are going to read those. So,
maybe we could just like, instead of bonding over books that we like, we can bond over books we don't like.
Absolutely. I love it. I'm all for it. You know what? That's more fun. It, like to tell someone like, didn't you love this book? And they're like, yeah. And then you kind of sit there quietly. But if you're like, I hated this book. And they're like, me too. Now let's break it down for 45 minutes.
Correct. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
We're still in a pandemic. We're in month 12 of a pandemic. Let's do something fun.
Yeah.
So, okay. Anything else you think people should know about?
If you are a US reader,
yes.
We have our Together We Read program is happening now, between now and I think the 25th. I should know that. You can go to your library and get Kate Claiborne's Love Lettering ebook or audiobook without waitlist or holds. You can listen to my interview with Kate from 2 weeks ago, I believe. Last week. So I think that's all.
Yeah, I think so too. Cool. All right. I hope you guys liked us talking about books we don't care for, and let us know. I'm genuinely curious to really know what you guys thought about this. So I hope you guys enjoyed this episode of the Professional Book Nerds Podcast.
Readers can sample and borrow the titles mentioned in today's episode from overdrive.com, and our library friends can purchase these titles in Marketplace. Professional Book Nerds is proud to be an Evergreen Podcast signature program. To learn about other Evergreen podcasts, visit evergreenpodcasts.com. Our podcast is produced, recorded, and edited by Adam Sokol and Jill Grunewald, and presented by Overdrive. For more information, visit professionalbooknerds.com.
I'm Ken Harbaugh, host of Burn the Boats from Evergreen Podcasts. I interview political leaders and influencers, folks like award-winning journalist Soledad O'Brien and conservative columnist Bill Kristol, about the choices they confront when failure is not an option. I won't agree with everyone I talk to, but I respect anyone who believes in something enough to risk everything for it. Because history belongs to those willing to burn the boats. Episodes are out every other week wherever you get your podcasts.